This portion of the show is brought to you by Namarco's Pizza. Order online at namarcospizza.com. All right, welcome everyone. Thanks for listening. Jeff Horvitz here. Happy to be here with you today. I think I got a really great show for you today. In just a minute, Mark Howitz, and you all know Mark, regular guest, co-host, and regular host now on the program, plus Glenn Leist with WT Wealth Management. Here's what we're going to get into on this one. ESGs, environmental social governance, the impacts, and we're going to talk corporate boards and how these big hedge funds are using this for power, according to Glenn Leist. Then we're going to get, speaking of power, electrification, the myth. We'll get into our failing schools and what to do about it, the Federal Reserve, inflation, and much, much more. I think this is going to be a really informative show, so stick around. And if you got any comments, love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Before I do that, I want to remind you about my good friends out at Timberline Firearms and Training. Our Second Amendment is so important, and gun safety and training is so important as well. Timberline Firearms and Training, they have all kinds of training courses out there, whether you're new to firearms, somewhere in the middle, or expert level. They can bring you to that next level when it comes to firearms. Give Timberline Firearms and Training a call right now and book one of these courses. They go pretty quick. And tell them I sent you. Please do that with all of our great sponsors. 928-526-7900. Plus, take a drive out there. It's worth coming from anywhere in Arizona, anywhere in northern Arizona, to go to their great indoor shooting range. Check out their firearms, their Liberty safes, ammunition, accessories. They got a ton of stuff out there. Timberline Firearms and Training. One more thing before we get to it with Glenn and Mark. Please subscribe to the podcast. Also, follow me on the Rumble channel. We got video up there, and it's going very well so far. So I hope you'll look me up. Look up Jeff Horvitz on Rumble, or go to talkwithjeff.com. There's a video right up top there, and follow me. All right, let's get right to it with Glenn Leist and Mark Howitt. All right, Glenn Leist is here with us from WT Wealth Management. Mark Howitt's filling in as well. We're going to talk, and we hit on this in the past, and I think this is going to be something that we're going to have to hit on more and more, which is the ESG stuff, environmental,
social governance.
Whew, that sounds like trouble to me. I know you defined what this is, Glenn, just a couple weeks ago, but I think we should start first. What does it mean?
Yeah, so basically it's a rating system that they use to rate different companies and how they score in each of these areas. So they'll have different rating agencies. They'll say, how are you doing with the environment? How are you doing with the social? How are you doing with governance? And the environment, the things they're looking for is, what are their impact on the environment? How are they using their natural resources? What are, you know, are they emitting greenhouse gases? Are they doing anything to offset that? So that's going to be environmental. Social is going to be like, what are the company's labor practices? How do they treat their employees? And what kind of impact do they have on the community at large? Okay. And then governance is going to be, it's corporate structure. You know, what does their board of directors look like? You know, is it complying with the DEI standards, which is diversity, equity, inclusion? And so a lot of times they'll say, hey, you have a board of 12 people, you know, six of them have to meet this certain demographic. And so you're already going, some of these policies, while seem good at the surface, can go awry really quickly, and they can change too. They're all very subjective. So that's what ESG means. And now there's been a movement to, you know, all these companies want to get a good ESG score. And usually it's like 1 out of 5 stars, if you will. Okay. And if you're above 4, that it allows you to be included in more pension funds, you know, big retirement funds, asset managers will include you. So there's an incentive to, you know, get a good ESG score, because if you don't, you know, it could be a huge impact on your business. And so that has been a financial motivator for a lot of companies to adopt these policies. Even if they're not a big fan of them, they're kind of forced to.
They're pushing it.
Yeah, because so much money is involved.
Is this what happened with Anheuser-Busch and Bud Light, do you think?
100%, yeah. So what are the big pushers? Where is the big push of wanting to be included in the ESG? Where is that coming from? And a lot of it's coming from the asset manager. So like your BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, which together, those three companies are like $70 trillion in mutual funds and assets under management. So and they're all pushing the ESG thing to say, hey, you need to have 4 stars or above, or we're not going to include you in any of the, you know, mutual funds that we have or the assets that we manage. And so, these companies, if they say like a Target, they may have a 15% overall, you know, 15% of the company is owned by these asset managers. So say if the asset managers pull, you know, their target shares, that's a huge loss of capital. So a lot of these companies are kind of, in a lot of ways, forced to implement these policies, even if they don't want to. And frankly, sometimes the companies know that these policies are bad for business. I mean, I'm no marketing genius, but you look at some marketing campaigns that have come out there and you have a hard time, I have a hard time looking at it and going, did they not think this one through? Like, yeah. What? Why are you, you know, diving into all these different social issues that you know will divide your
most recently
your
Bud Light Target was
yeah.
Disastrous.
Those are yeah. two ones yeah. where you know Anheuser-Busch, which you know is the parent company of Budweiser-Busch, lost $26 billion with the beat. That is massive over one marketing campaign. I gotta believe that there is yeah. money, you know, wrapped up in marketing people, very smart marketing executives, and they made a conscious decision to do that campaign.
Well, let me ask you this, because what you're saying earlier is these companies have to, they want to get the good ESG score, so mm-hmm. they pack the board under diversity, equity, inclusion, whatever, whatever. And I always want the most qualified person, regardless of any quota you send out there. You want the best person on, let's say, the board. Let's say, Who assigns these board members? Is it the usually the CEO gets a big say in it, or
the shareholders? So if you're the asset manager, you're going to have 15-20% shareholder value. Okay. So you're gonna
get someone on the board.
Yes, you're gonna be able to push your weight around. Yeah.
So if I had 15%, I say, I'm Glenn, you're going on the board. I want you on the board and make sure this company's straight. But it sounds like they're putting people on the board that are making more social decisions.
Yep.
Than good practical business decisions. But I go back to something we've hit on a lot, Glenn, in the past, which is what's the purpose of these companies?
Yeah.
And is it to make BlackRock happy, or is it to make, well, I guess BlackRock's a shareholder. Isn't it to return investment on the shares and make money?
Yeah. So every company that wants to stay in business, their model is increase shareholder value.
Yeah.
So make money, make more of it each year, be more profitable, and make your customers happy. Customers or clients, provide them with a good or service that they enjoy. And so when you start getting away from that model, you're not going to be a business for long. You know, you just can't. That's businesses have to be profitable to remain, unless they're, you know, some sort of government agency, which just gets tax revenue and they don't have to be profitable in that aspect. So yeah, it's kind of mind boggling. Like, why would you shift your focus from increasing shareholder value, which is exactly what some of these companies have had to do? They've shifted it to say, well, we're going to increase the stakeholder value. That's our main goal, is improving stakeholder value. You're like, what's a stakeholder? Well, it can be a employee. It can be a customer. It can be someone in the community. It could be all sorts of people that are affiliated or have a tie with the company, but have no financial interest in the performance and profitability of it. So, because if you're under that first threshold of improving profitability, you'd be violating your fiduciary duty to mm-hmm. implement these policies that you knew were going to be bad for business, bad for profits, and bad for the shareholders. And so these companies have had to make that shift, and it's starting to become an issue. So, you know, you named off Target. That's another one that they're, you know, one of their product lines they put out really, you know, were upsetting to a lot of their customers, and they lost $6 billion. And I didn't even realize this myself, but my wife used to go to Target a lot, and she's like, I haven't gone there in 3 months. She's like, they have not gotten a dollar from me.
Yeah, because my wife did the same thing.
That campaign upset me. And I see the bills. Like, there was a lot of money that we were spending at Target. And so, like, it doesn't make sense to me why you'd want to implement these policies if you're a business, unless you're being pressured to. That's what I think is happening, is they're being pressured. And if the board of directors is not on board, well, guess what? The, you know, asset managers will just oust them and put in a new board. And you hit on the DEI. It stands for diversity, equity, inclusion. And what that is saying, we're going to make sure certain demographics of people are represented on the board of directors, regardless of if they're the best candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes problematic, because people may be elevated that are not qualified for the job. I mean, you want any job to be based on merit, competency, and excellence, right? And whatever the person looks like, their gender, their skin color, anything else should be irrelevant. Yeah. You're saying, I just best want person. The best candidate. Yeah, and that's how I've always thought business should be run.
That's how I thought it was run. Well, apparently not in America today. Yeah.
And that's why these policies become so dangerous. In fact, DEI instructors and, you know, is one of the fastest growing jobs in the nation in the last couple of years. We've seen an explosive growth because all these companies want to be able to check the box and say, hey, we did the diversity and equity inclusion thing. We've done that. And so we've done our parts to make the world a better place. But if you actually interview or watch YouTube, you'll see people that were those individuals teaching those classes. One of them I saw, he's like, he totally changed and went the opposite direction because he realized the content was actually being more divisive. It was actually more exclusive and divisive because everything was an issue. Like if you look at someone and wink your eye or do something, it's like a microaggression. Or if you talk to them this way, it's this big thing. So people are like, I don't even want to talk to anyone that looks different than me because I don't want to get in trouble of something that I may do wrong and I don't even know it. So it's like unintentional.
People are very nervous.
Yeah. So Glenn, I don't understand why the asset managers, you know, these big investors, what is their motivation for wanting the ESG, the DEI?
What control? Control, 100%. So ESG was started by an individual, Larry Fink, right? He got more money than he knows what to do with. There's nothing he can't buy or own. Now, once you have money, what's the next thing that you're going to want? You know, money, power, influence, power. And power. Yeah. So that's why I think the play is they want power. Because I was thinking about that too. Why the push for this stuff? Because, you know, it's bad for business and some of these social issues are ever changing. So what may be a social today, you know, it's going to change from 5 years from now. And so it's like this, almost this impossible, you know, bar that keeps being raised.
Never reach the rainbow.
Yeah. You're never going to reach, you know, the rainbow, if you will, because the bar always changes. So I 100% believe it's about power. So if you have three companies, you know, State Street, BlackRock and Vanguard, and three of the, you know, people that are head honchos of that going together in a room and they're all friends, and that is $70 trillion of assets. And you control that much, you know, that's a lot of power. It really is. And you might argue that more power than some of our elected officials because they have so much sway to determine how things go.
But why would they want to sway it with this ESG stuff? Why not something else that is more interesting? You know, I don't
get that the popular culture thing, perhaps, you know, was that the thing that was hitting in popular culture, they felt they could get a bigger.
We'll look at everything. Traction. When you buy products, I was drinking cranberry juice this morning, and it said, you know, pledged climate friendly, and that's what it said on their on the label. So you have all these products that are saying we're climate friendly, we're pledging to reduce emissions, and
in
all
the
these,
plastic bottle,
or all these other social issues that they're doing, and you're like, oh great, you know, I'm buying a pair of yoga pants that aren't racist, you know, like really, like I don't understand, like as a consumer, like some of this stuff is kind of insane. I mean, that's a funny example, but it's I think Chris Rock actually did a comedy routine on that. Sure. About the non-racist yoga pants costing $90, and then the Walmart ones, you know, costing $8.
Yeah.
You know, it just are awful. But it does bring up a good point. Like, shouldn't we just be concerned about the product itself and the excellence of the product? You know, why do all those other things matter? Because for me as a consumer, it doesn't matter. You know, all those other areas.
I want a good product.
Yeah, I want a good product. Yeah. And I would hope the companies treat the environment, do all that well. But that's
if you see a company and they're dumping stuff over into the lake all the time, and you're like, you hear about it, and you're like, wait a second, I don't want to buy from you. You're poisoning the water. You're doing this. But these guys are going so far. They're hitting on the social issues.
Yeah, so I'll use this example. So Walmart, the Walmart sons, I forget their names now, they're big into mountain biking. So they've gone into Arkansas and said, hey, we're going to build trails. You know, basically government, get on board with us because this is what we want. And because, again, they have so much money. They don't need money. They just want to build
the trails.
They want to do something that they enjoy.
Yeah.
But I'm like, these guys that you're mentioning, is this what they really enjoy? The ESG? I mean, is this like what they're...
You get sucked up in the power. I think Glenn's on it. Glenn's on it.
I would just do something else.
Glenn, that's their hobby. Yeah, wouldn't you want to go out and have fun? It's their hobby. It's their thing.
Wouldn't it be yachts or like... Ski resort in their backyard.
Well, they do that too.
That's the thing. They already have all that. Yeah. And if you look at an interview of Larry Fink, you know, there's one where he basically says he's God. He's like, I am the next iteration of God or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
And you're like, am I literally hearing this? And I think it was like a documentary I watched about the ESG in the last week. And so it was kind of illuminating. Like, I am learning more and more about the stuff. So maybe that helps answer your question. I don't know. I've never met these individuals, so I can only, you know, have an educated guess, and it's just an opinion, but I think it's about power control.
He's worth, according to this, $1 billion. So he's kind of a smaller player compared to like an Elon Musk or something, you know?
Sure, but look at his influence.
Look at his influence, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe Musk should buy out the company.
I mean, something if I had like that kind of money and I just didn't care about making more money, I'd be thinking along the lines of, let's buy American farmland. Or, you know, to control the, for power, control the food.
That's Bill Gates'
play. Yeah, I was going to say, that's right? Bill Gates' play right now. Yeah. So.
That type of play would be much that's more a smart, interesting.
To me, I think that's, everybody's always going to need food. That seems like the way to go.
Or if you control the farmland and you can...
Control the food prices.
You can control the food prices, but you can also choose not to grow stuff and then force people to buy like an artificially created lab food. Meat or
that's
something
true.
Like that.
That's true. Yeah. Beyond meat stuff. Yeah.
All right, don't go anywhere. More to come with Glenn Least and Mark Howitz. Hey, you know that my family has always bought a little bit of physical gold and silver securely stored in a secure, safe location for many years now. I do not tell you and I do not give you financial advice. Always seek out a financial planner and so-called experts whenever making any decisions that come to your finances. But I can tell you that I've bought physical gold and silver from Desert Gold Exchange, and I bought from a lot of people over the years, but I have found that Desert Gold Exchange, they are true to what they say, which is they keep their overhead low. They pass those savings on to you. Put them to the test. I think you're going to find that their fees and commissions are some of the lowest out there. I think they're going to really surprise you with that and with their knowledge. You want to ask some questions. You've got questions on physical gold and silver, call Desert Gold Exchange. This is an easy way to order physical gold and silver, get it delivered to you in just a couple of days. Desert Gold Exchange, 888-852-4343. That's Desert Gold Exchange at 888-852-4343. All right, more with Mark Howitz and Glenn Least. Okay, so I can tell that you think they're too powerful. I mean, obviously,
sure,
too much power, too much influence. What can people do, Glenn? Yeah. I guess that's the next big thing. I have two questions here.
Yeah.
What can people do? And also, is this another fad? America seems to do, everything's like 10-year bubbles, and everybody gets into these things, and then they crash and burn because they're just not practical. Is the ESG movement, especially in light of Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch, and Target, and there's probably going to be others, people step back and say, wait a second, I'm good. So let's start with that. Is this a fad? Is this something that will probably go the wayside or not?
It depends on society, because I think a society has really adopted it and run with it. And in all honesty, our firm has both an ESG and an anti-ESG portfolio. So some of the clients that are with our firm really like the ESG stuff. And hey, if that's for you and that's what you want, power to you, it's fine. You know, we want to be able to provide that. I personally think from a dollar standpoint and profitability standpoint, I think there's some inherent issues with ESG. The premise seems good, right? Like, who doesn't want to save the environment? But a lot of times those environmental, you know, policies to get the extra check. Like, here's a good example. Tesla scores awful on the ESG scale, but Philip Morris and a tobacco company scores incredibly well. And you're like, okay.
Well, they grow plants.
Yeah, like, I don't understand this. Like, I thought Tesla was supposed to be helping the environment, helping the world with the electric cars. And then, you know, you dive more into EV and renewable energies, and you realize maybe it's not as clean and perfect as a solution as we've been told, because, you know, it's got its inherent, you know, byproducts issues. I mean, you drive a Tesla and the battery goes out, you pretty much have to destroy your car. Because,
did you see the Tesla out front?
Because the cost to replace the battery in the Tesla is going to be probably more than almost was what you bought it for, because they build the car around the battery because the battery cannot be punctured. If it's punctured, it just explodes.
There's a Tesla out front that Bruce, a good buddy of mine, he's got to get it towed to Phoenix. It's got 4,000 pounds of batteries underneath. The car weighs 6,000 pounds. It's 4,000 pounds of batteries.
Wow. Yeah. And so what do they do with those depleted batteries?
When it's done,
those are toxic waste and you can't just recycle them. So you're like, yes, you save some, you know, the environment by not having as much emissions, but then you have this other problem over here. So that's what I'm just saying. It's never a perfect or, oh, we built a bunch of windmills. You're like, okay, well, where'd you get the fiberglass? That fiberglass never breaks down, never biodegradable. And how many years does that thing need to be running for it to offset its carbon footprint? You're like, so these are good questions. It's like, that's where I'm saying ESG can be very subjective. Mm-hmm. And it just depends on whose opinion and who's being subjective at the
time. Perhaps since it's new still, newer, education over time, people will be like, okay, sure. Yeah. I question this, and maybe it'll go by the wayside.
Yeah. So what can people do?
That's the next question, is what can people do if they're not into that, or if they're into it, I guess.
Yeah. So if they're into it, there's a plenty of ESG funds. They'll say socially aware or ESG at the end of it. So there's plenty of options for that. Okay. It used to be, strangely enough, if you were a 401k plan provider, like you're an employer and you offered a 401k plan, you couldn't offer an ESG fund in your 401k lineup because you'd be violating your fiduciary duty because you knew that it was an underperforming fund. So there is recently some legislation that came out of the White House that basically says, hey, we're going to give those a pass. Like, you can include ESG even though we know it doesn't, or we know it goes against the, you know, fiduciary duty to provide the best options. It's for the better good, you know, that sort of thing. So what can people do? You know, you could boycott the companies. In some instances, that works, right? There's plenty of light beers, right? There's Modelo, Stella Artois, which both like both of them. There's Corona. I mean, there's lots of options,
alternatives,
right?
Yeah.
Alternatives. But what about some companies that we can't boycott that are so ingrained, like Verizon? We're talking about them. If you want good, reliable service in Northern Arizona, you know, Verizon is, you know, going to be one of the top, you know, options. Verizon or T-Mobile, like, yeah, you got some of these other smaller players, but nationally, I don't know how well they stack up. So it's like, even if you didn't like what Verizon is doing, you're kind of trapped. Or, you know, imagine if we tried to live without Walmart, Target, Home Depot. You know, that'd be really hard, right? Or a food company, like, you don't want to go shop at Kroger. Like, yeah, good luck. What are your other options?
Yeah.
If you boycott Kroger,
you're going to get a local Walmart corner one.
Yeah, so one of the ways we have a response for that is boycott doesn't always work. And so what we've done is say, let's go back to where the power is at. Yes, there's power in the dollars and how we shop with business, but there's also power in the shares. So if we can say, hey, we as a total conglomerate have 18%, you know, shares of this one company, because we're, you know, now launching a different movement that says, hey, we just want to focus on what is good for profitability for the company. So pro growth of the shareholder value. That's what we want to focus in on. Well, if you have an 18%, you know, total amount, then yeah, you can go up against some of these, you know, heavy hitters and vote them down. Say, no, we don't want these social issues or these other things that are bad for business. We just want the company to make a good cup of coffee. And that's the main goal. Like, yeah, we don't need to dive in these other social issues. So we've actually launched a fund that allows our clients to still own those companies, but actually make real change from the boots on the ground. And so we're excited. We just launched that last week. So it gives people an option if they feel kind of powerless of, like, if I don't like this ESG stuff and it's not for me, what can I do without sacrificing, you know, good returns, right?
Because the anti-ESG route.
Yeah, okay. The anti-ESG, or like woke, you know, woke mitigation, or maybe you just say, hey, we're just going to go back to focusing on increasing shareholder value. Like, that's the, you know, that's what it was 15 years ago for all companies, but we've kind of strayed away. So that's something we're now offering. It's gone live and we're really excited about it.
That's good. I'm me personally, and I don't give any financial advice, of course. I see woke, DEI, anything like that, ESG, it's just, I'm running for the exit. That's just me personally, though.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure there's some smarter people than me that can make plenty of money at it.
And on the moral level, you could say, hey, whether morally I agree with it or not, it's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
just profitability, right? People. That's what I'm looking at for a company, and that's what's the most important. Isn't that the whole point of investing, right? Is to invest, obviously, within reason, right? There's certain areas of the market that we're not going to touch. You know, we're not going to touch adult industry, gambling. We're not going to, you know, chemical warfare. We're not going to do tobacco. Those are just areas that we as a firm, like, I think everyone
can agree. Tobacco, they got the good.
Philip Morrison, go figure that.
It's a topsy-turvy kind of world now, right?
And some of the oil companies actually score pretty good, too.
Pretty good. They buy enough carbon offsets or
carbon credits,
windmills or solar panels or whatever. All right, I guess something to be extremely aware of when you're working with all this stuff. It ain't going to go away anytime soon. However, maybe people will kind of wake up to it or woke up to it and say, okay, this is for me, this isn't for me. And as it moves along here, I think maybe it'll be a little different. People are like, nah, not for me.
Yeah,
we're getting to a point, I notice, where not everybody's just sitting down being quiet when people show up and say, you have to do this. They're like, okay, we went far enough. And I think we're seeing that in America right now.
Prime example is media has radically shifted over the last 5 years. I mean, the amount of people watching cable TV is and broadcast networking is just, you know, down substantially. Mm-hmm. People want to watch long form podcasts. Why? Because people can actually sit there and talk for 30, 60, and 2 hours. And you actually, it's hard to fake it. Whereas when you're doing 30 second spots on the, you know, TV, it's easy to put up a facade. So I think there's an actual better connection. I think a lot of us, you know, are really busy, so we can listen while we're doing other things. So I think that's why traditional media is frankly dying. Like, I think it's going to be gone here real soon. You know,
or it's going to be very specialized. It's just specialized because there's so much out there, and people want something a little deeper nowadays. You know,
and there's a lot of influence too, like in these big networks. Who are the advertisers? Whoever's paying the bills for the advertising is going to determine the views of that network. That's just how the game's played.
All right, a lot more with Glenn Least and Mark Hout coming up here in just a second. Don't forget to head on to my friends at Sportsman's Bar and Grill, voted best sports bar in Flagstaff. This is worth coming from all over the state to come enjoy some great food. They got a $4 menu. So if you hop in your electric car and you're getting a free electric from the unicorns and all that, and then you drive all the way into or up to Flagstaff from no matter where you're at, you can then save even more money by ordering off the $4 menu. They've got great soups. They've got great chicken wings. That's not on the $4 menu, though, but they've got the best chicken wings out there. They've got Philly cheesesteak burgers, you name it, plus great drink specials always going on at Sportsman's Bar and Grill. Easy to find just north of downtown Flagstaff, right there in that Bash's Shopping Center. It looks like a good weekend to come to Flagstaff. I know they have that that fly-in happening at the Flagstaff Airport. You might even see me and Owen out there. We saw a pair of F-35s fly by. You might hear them here in just a second, just a little while ago. So pretty cool stuff. So head on out to Sportsman's Bar and Grill. And, hey, if you're driving on up to Flagstaff or if you're driving around Flagstaff or anywhere in northern Arizona, and you get a rock chip in your windshield, another place you can stop at to get that fixed real quick is Diamond Auto Glass. Always call Diamond Auto Glass first. Don't call your insurance company. It's going to be a whole process. Instead, go right to Diamond Auto Glass. Great independent company. Great Northern Arizona company. Diamond Auto Glass will fix those rock chips. Takes about 10 to 15 minutes to fill that in. If you've had glass coverage with them before, it's included. It's free. Otherwise, just give them a quick call. They'll fix it. I've done it. It's better than letting it crack on your whole windshield. Diamond Auto Glass, 928-779-4140. That's Diamond Auto Glass at 928-779-4140. Or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. All right, we'll be right back. Finish or continue on with Mark Howitt and Glenn Least. A lot more to come. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and follow me on Rumble as well. Hang tight. Back in just a minute.
This is the Jeff Horowitz Show.
Funny story. So Vivek Ramaswamy actually created an anti-ESG fund.
Oh, he did one too. Okay.
Yeah, so this is called Strive. And so his fund is actually one that we look to integrate into our models at some level. But yeah, he's basically, you know.
Seems like a smart guy.
Very smart. Like, the more I watch of him, the more I'm like, he's pretty sharp. You know, he's like, he's my age, so.
Yeah, he's fighting for number two position. Fighting for that number two position. Now we'll see.
You know, I was thinking about your anti-woke thing, and it'd be a curious thing to take $5,000, put it in an anti-woke fund and $5,000 in ESG fund, and just see what what happens.
You're hedging.
Yeah. Because I kind of tried to do that on my own. I was like, I'm going to go buy Cracker Barrel, you know, a solid Christian company, the family company. And then all of a sudden they got a little woke and their stock dropped about 10%.
Mm-hmm. Did they go woke?
Just something woke.
And
got their base upset. And they dropped about 10% of their stock instantly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I bought, of course. Yeah. And
I just noticed I don't get as much muffins anymore.
I did the same thing with Alaska Airlines. I was like, that's a good conservative company. And they went a little bit towards the woke and their stock dropped like crazy. I was like,
remember who your customers are nowadays. And I hate these companies that are trying to be everything to everybody. Mm-hmm. There's so much business out there. like we can do this show and we appeal to, I hope everybody listens and learns something, but I understand the base of who we appeal to, and that's fine. And there's enough companies out there that also have the same view, and enough customers that are like, hey, I want to do business with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's other companies on the other side that like that. I think there's enough business to go around.
And I've actually adopted that over the last couple of years as my business has grown. It's like, I'm just going to be Glenn, right? And I'm going to be respectful of everyone that comes through my doors and, you know, be respectful of their opinions. Mm-hmm. But I'm also not going to be shy away from what my true convictions are to say, hey, if you hire me as your investment advisor, here's what is important to me. And if those align with your values, great. We'll have a great working relationship. But if we see differently, that's okay. Like, I'm at the point where I want to help people, but if it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit, and that's okay. There's other investment groups to work with that maybe, you know, you align with more. But I, like I said, I like to win. So I'm always looking at, like, how do we get the best return and do the best, you know, we can, and always be looking forward. I mean, we can talk all about AI and robotics and our outlook there, because I think that's going to be a, you know, growing industry very quickly.
So.
Yeah, it already is, but, you know, we can go to rabbit hole in that one.
Yeah, we'll hit that one next time. But no, it is. There's enough to, you know, when I first started this show 7 years ago, there were some people that wouldn't come on board. It was a little harder at first. And this was a time when people like Beck and Limbaugh and others were getting boycotted. And that's not saying that can't happen, but just by you could say something really stupid, I guess, but we're pretty careful on that. But we just speaking our viewpoints every day, that used to be the cancelable item. You're going to get boycotted and then we're going to go to your sponsors. Knock on wood. That's harder now because there's so many people doing it, and there's people who've realized, hey, you know what? There's enough to go around. That's not working anymore.
No, you got to be real. You got to be yourself.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's people that are going to boycott you because you don't have LED light bulbs in every.
Yeah. No, that's fine. You know,
just got to be you.
Yeah, you got to be you, and I think that's the biggest thing nowadays.
Okay, so you got me in a rabbit hole, but you know, at one point in time, they had to actually change and reduce the length of time that light bulbs could last, because they would last for so long that they weren't able to make any money. So they put laws in place to say you can't have them last more than this amount of time. Because some of the incandescents, like those last 50, 70, 80 years, it's insane. Like,
as long as you don't hit them, you're good.
There's like some fire department in New York City that has had the light on for like the last 100 years. It's insane. It's still on. Still working.
They last, It's
kind of true of everything, though. Like appliances, we had to a dryer go out at our house, and I was like, I ordered a new one from Home Depot because there's no local appliance company anymore. But in the meantime, I called up the local appliance guy. I was like, man, maybe you can just fix it. So he came over and he fixed it, and he's like, yeah, you know, cancel the new one. You don't want the new one. The old one is going to last you so much. I just had to replace.
I know that appliance guy. I know you're talking about.
Replace the fuse. That's all I had to do.
Yeah,
go in there and.
I think I deal with the same guy, and he'll tell you, you can't go anymore. Or most of the time, they're like, get the part. If you can still get the part, keep that old one going.
And I was just trying to find a dryer that wasn't connected to the internet.
The dishwashers are really bad now because they have all these restrictions for how much water use, you know, how long each cycle can be, how much liquid is being used, and you frankly end up having to wash your dishes twice in the dishwasher. So yeah, you may have saved, but then you didn't, you know, reach your target, or you have to end up washing by hand afterwards. And you're like, wait, wasn't the whole goal to save water? I think we're actually spending more water and more frustration, more time. Let's just go back to where they were. Cause those old dishwashers were just their tanks. I mean, you could put in a whole birthday cake on like a platter and it'd come out clean. You're like, I don't know where all the birthday cake went.
Well,
but
also,
I mean, that's just the difference in technology. And
they don't last as long. I had one of those recently that it was 5 years. It's like you're lucky to get 5 years now. It used to be go for a couple decades, a lot of these appliances. We have an old washer that's got to be many decades. So if you look at that from an environmental standpoint, you say, well, maybe this is less efficient, but it lasts for 20 years and I can get it serviced versus the new one. It lasts 4 or 5 times longer than the old one. Isn't that better for the environment? Or Mark and I were talking housing recently, and you know, they want to retrofit everything. They want to do this R9 million, whatever.
R60.
Yeah, on and on. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, maybe I have an older drafty house, but it's there.
Yeah.
It already exists. You don't have to. Maybe I have an older car, but the body of the car, all of that, it's already there. Maybe it's not as fuel efficient, but you're not creating a new one. You're not having to dig things out of the ground. I don't think they think about that.
So if you look at China, they've got the largest EV market in the world, and they're starting to run into those issues of, you know, they have the EV vehicle out on the road for 5 or 6 years, and then it costs more to put a new battery in than it would be to just buy a new car. Yep. Like, yep. Look at the depreciation values on a Tesla. You buy it, and then 2 years later, it's lost half its value or more. Yep. Because the batteries just don't last that long. And then it's like, well, if it costs more to put in a new battery, and you might as well just take it to the scrapyard and then buy another one. You're like, wait a minute. I thought we were trying to do better with, you know, our resources. Yeah. That doesn't seem like that's helping. That seems like that is counterintuitive. And this is coming from someone that drove a Tesla like 3 weeks ago. It was a blast, right?
It's
I loved it. It's a fun car. Except when you have to charge it. You're like, that's a nightmare. So I was in Seattle and I was like, oh my gosh. Like it took, and I thought Seattle would have them everywhere, but you'd show up, the one would be broken, it wouldn't be working, it'd be out of service, or okay. One of them, 10 people waiting, you're like, ugh. Like,
is Tesla going to contribute to heart disease? Now, here's my argument.
Oh, no.
All the Tesla charges are at gas stations.
I'll put a disclaimer here.
You know, you go to the charge of Tesla, it's next to a gas station.
Okay.
And you're going to be there for 45 minutes. So where are you going to eat? You're going to eat out of the gas station. So now you're eating junk food while you're
eating fried chicken and hot dogs at a gas station.
I thought you were going to go somewhere completely
different. I thought you were going somewhere completely different with that, too.
But, yeah. I mean, really, we stop and fill up gas, and I see these Tesla people sitting there for 45 minutes.
Well, okay, so there's electrical charge going on.
Fill up my Slurpee.
When we were filling up our car, recharging it, my wife's like, let's not sit in the car. I'm like, why? She's like, we're literally sitting on top of a battery that all this electrical current being pushed into it. Do you really want to be sitting that close to it while it's doing that? I'm like, yeah, okay, we'll sit outside. Like, make a good point. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good thing you have kids already. All those electrical charges.
You said what we're all thinking. Yeah. Right?
Some internal thoughts. No, I think those are questions that need to be answered. And I think that's the problem with new technology is it's all on paper, you know, in the beginning. And it's like, oh, we're going to switch to this because it's going to be great until we switch to it. And it's like, we realize the problems. It's like anything. You can have the best business plan in the world, but until you actually run the business, start the business, you're like, yeah, that didn't work out.
Well, look at asbestos, right? It'll make your house fireproof. Your siding will last forever.
Yeah, but it's asbestos.
It's awesome. And nobody knew.
Yeah, nobody knew.
It 15, sounded great. 20 years later.
Yeah, it's like Mike Tyson. You know, everybody's got a great plan until you get punched in the face. Yeah. Then the plan changes rapidly.
Well, even some of these newer technologies, I think we've foregone some of the older technologies and just automatically assume newer is better. So you go back to looking at nuclear energy, they've really improved it. They could do cold fusion now, which has no, you know, capacity from what I understand of having a nuclear meltdown. And yet you can have pretty much infinite, unlimited energy, you know, production. You're like, why are we not doing more of that? Like, you know, why are we trying to do these windmills and solar panels, which I have solar in my house. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against it, but I'm just like trying to think same thing with oil. Like we're trying to move away from oil because it's so bad. But yet when you do pencil out the math for having the EV car versus the gas, I think you're going to be very surprised that it might be about the same cost to just drive the gas car around.
Again, the Tesla that's sitting out front is Bruce Sithlinger's, and he's talked about it. It broke down here a week or two ago, and he's got to get towed down to Phoenix. And it's fine, Bruce. I don't care. You can leave it out there as long as you want. He owns two. He bought them early, and he said, this is a car you just have to be patient with. I love this car. You have to understand its limitations, and that's perfectly fine. Enthusiasts, he said, are going to absolutely love it, or situations where you're in a bigger city and you have lots of charging ports and you're commuting shorter distances. There are limitations just like anything. And I think consumers should be aware of that.
Yeah. Like I think exactly like you're saying, like I wouldn't be opposed to having a Tesla, but I charge it at my house and still have a gas powered car. Yeah. So that way, you know, I can put it around town. I'm not going long distances. Cause that is one of the big issues is finding charging stations on the road. But hey, I've got solar, you know, pretty much you could argue like I'm charging up that Tesla for pretty much free.
No, that's a great side of
that. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think all these things, like you're saying,
they all have their place. Mm-hmm, I think. Yeah. And, the government can't regulate it or can't mandate it to happen, a whole new economy, basically. And say,
they're trying to. Do you see the Inflation Reduction Act, where they're, it's like $7,500 if you buy a new Tesla, $14,000 or something if you get a solar, you know, install. There's all sorts of incentives. I didn't even know about that until the solar guy came knocking on my door. He's like, yeah, you get a $14,000 tax credit.
And I'm tax like, credit? So how much do you put out of your pocket if you're really doing your house? I mean, it's...
Well, I financed it all. So, like, I didn't have to do anything down, and then...
And then you still get the rebate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The tax rebate.
Yeah, see, financing solar has been a big thing. It's. I'm sure you can testify to it. It's got its problems. If you're going to stay in your house, it's probably okay. If you go to sell it, then you've got to... It's that extra amount you have financed.
Oh, you're carrying it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But, yeah, it may work out in the long term in Arizona. Solar panels probably a good idea. Upstate New York,
Well, and the ability to not fully rely on the grid is really a nice feature.
Yeah, so that's the next thing I want to do is put the actual battery system in there so I can store energy as well. Mm-hmm. Because I live in Kachina Village and our power goes out, you know, here and there. And
you got a lot of shade there too, yeah.
Yeah, but if you don't have, like, I found out the hard way, if your energy goes out and your natural gas goes out in the middle of winter time, you're SOL. So we put in a gas-burning stove. So at least, okay, worst case scenario, we're not going to freeze.
Gas or wood?
Wood.
Okay,
wood. We just chopped down the wood or whatever. Yeah.
And there's we got a little bit of wood out there. Talk about helping the environment. Doing something for the environment. Go and your health.
Yeah, forest, you know how forest hard it is. Management. Yeah.
You know how hard it is. It's hard work. It's good for you. I mean, as long as you don't chop your, you know, leg off or something.
So kind of going on another tangent, California ran into the issue where they weren't doing enough management of the forest. They weren't cutting down enough trees because they were in nature, usually lightning would strike and it would take out part of the rainforest. But now if that happens, we go and put the fire out. So we have to kind of offset that with reducing some of the, you know, the bottom layers. My wife's father is a, you know, he's been in the Forest Service for years. And so a little bit, but and then they have these huge wildfires in California because they have so much backed up stuff that they should have been clearing out.
Yeah.
They didn't.
And here.
But they're like, hey, we don't want to chop down trees because it's bad for the environment. You're like, well, what about all those trees you just burnt down because of the fire and all the houses toll too. So you're like, okay, you know, nothing's ever perfect. I just think you need to look at it and go, okay, let's prioritize people first and then the environment second. You know, not to say the environment's not important, but we need to put people first. Like, you know, if you got rid of oil overnight, you'd probably have 100 million people die just instantly. Yeah. And so,
because
I heard, Greta Thunberg, I was watching a clip of her, and she's pretty adamant, like, we need to get rid of oil today. And I was thinking, well, what would oil life be like without oil? And it would be, you know, there'd be a catastrophic human, you know, cost just to save the world. You're like, the world's important, but more important than the world is the people living in the world.
Big, die off quick.
If you got rid of oil, you'd have no food for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Northeast, they heat theirs with oil.
Yes. Yep.
People would freeze to death.
Yes.
It's just impossible. You know, airline traffic stops, cargo ships stop, everything stops.
Your medicine ain't coming.
Yeah. How are things transported across the states? Through railroad and big rig trucks. Yep. And those are not solar power. They're diesel turbine engines. They're
all
gas.
Gone overnight.
Yeah.
You're not getting your fudge rounds. It's just everything is gone.
Ben and Jerry's is gone. But,
All right, more to come. Don't forget to get your HVAC system tuned up for the fall and winter coming up. Gettles High Desert Mechanical does the best job out there. That's who I call when I need to get my HVAC system fixed. Plus, they also do plumbing. Gettles High Desert Mechanical, 928-567-2200. Gettles High Desert Mechanical, use the company that Angela and I use, 928-567-2200. Back in a minute.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Okay, don't go anywhere. Second hour coming up, more with Mark Howitt, Glenn Lease, and myself, and we're going to get into education. Should I have gotten out of high school at 10th grade? Should I have gone on to college? Should people go to college, trade schools, and a lot more? So stick around. Plus, send me your email comments. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com and subscribe to the podcast, to the YouTube channel, and also follow me on Rumble. Hang tight. Back in just a few minutes. This portion of the show is brought to you by Sportsman's Bar and Grill. All right, welcome back. Hour two of the show. In just a sec, continue on with Mark Howitt and Glenn Lease. We're going to get into the mask madness that's going on, this push to re-mask up around the country, the vaccines, and much more. A busy hour. Education as well, going to hit on that. So stick around. Should I have left high school at grade 10? Should I have gone to college? Should anyone go to college? Should people go to specialized schools? We'll get into all that fun stuff coming up. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Always love hearing from you. If you're thinking about selling your home right now, somebody who knows she's at the top of her game, she knows what she's doing. That's why she comes on this program. That's why I rely on her for market advice when it comes to real estate. Go ahead and call Kelly Broaddus with the Broaddus Properties Group, brokered by eXp. Look, selling your home can be a really stressful thing. You need a team of people around you that know what they're doing. You need someone like Kelly Broaddus who's going to put the money into this sale to take the right pictures, do the aerials, get it listed, get it staged correctly. Kelly Broaddus will do all that. Give her a call. The only agent that I would call if I was selling a home right now, 888-446-5602. That's Kelly Broaddus at 888-446-5602. Or go online, get your instant valuation without even talking to an agent if you want to go that route. NorthernArizonaFineHomes.com. All right, let's get right to it.
Universities and certain places are looking to reinstitute the mask.
Some places have put out masks.
And it was it six cases that they found of the new variant?
So Mark said zero, but six would be.
Here's what happened. There's a private college in Atlanta, Georgia, of all places, where you know Trump and Giuliani, all these guys are getting indicted. They have zero cases on campus, but they've reinstituted a mask policy.
Yeah,
in spite of having no cases.
It's all political.
Yes, and then Lionsgate
film company.
That, I believe they have five floors in their office building. And they're like, if you're on floor 3 and 5, you have to wear masks. And 1, 2, and 4, you don't.
I just don't have to watch Lionsgate. I mean, here's the movies. Joyride, Operation Fortune. A bunch of stupid movies anyway.
My thought with that, because I was thinking about that the other night, like, are we going to actually have people comply? Like, I think there's going to be a lot more people that may have complied the first time around, but the second time around, they're like, you're not convincing me that this is something I'm going to go along with. Like, I've already had COVID. I've already beat it. I don't need to do this,
I won't comply, but you got to get on a plane. What are you going to do if the TSA says? Yeah.
So, Glenn, here's what the hospital up here did to the nurses. If you got vaccinated, they allowed you to stop wearing the mask. Mm. And they gave you a shirt that said, I'm vaccinated.
Oh, man. Yeah.
If you didn't get the vax, you had to go through a bunch of hoops for excuse not to get the vaccination. And then you've had to wear the mask up until about 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks
ago.
Yes. And so you've got...
Shame on them.
You're stuck with the mask all day, breathing into this thing 13 hours a day. And meanwhile, all the quote-unquote vaccinated people are wearing their nurses' outfits that say, I am vaccinated, rubbing it in your face that I don't have to wear a mask.
So long as that vaccine worked for.
So I have an interesting story about that. I know a healthcare professional that went and got the first round of vaccinations, was pretty much, pro-vaccine, really believed in the efficacy, young guy. And then a couple months later, he started having heart issues that he had never had before in his life. And it was this real wake-up call for him to be like, oh, my gosh, this is a side effect of the vaccination. That was his judgment call. And it makes sense, right? Because he had no previous history. And then he's having to get the second round to be able to continue working in the healthcare field. And now he's stuck in this limbo to go, I don't want to do further damage, but what are my alternatives? I'm kind of deep in this industry. I've been here for X amount of years. Do I just make a career shift or do I actually put my physical health in jeopardy, to do this second round? And those are all questions that, each person has to answer. And it's just challenging, right? Especially when you're
bombarded.
You're being forced into it from your employment and you don't feel like you have a whole lot of options.
There's a pro athlete here locally forced to get the vaccine. It's not a vaccine. It's a treatment of some kind. Now has chronic for life health issues as a direct result of that. Perfectly healthy, world-class Olympic level athlete.
Well, I think the thing nowadays, you can't even, for the longest time, you couldn't even ask these questions. They cancel you. That's died away because so many people are asking. Because how many 22-year-old people that can run 5 miles without breaking a sweat, these athletes all their life have collapsed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we don't know what that is.
It's just
weird. Right. It's just all these people just get, I don't know.
Same thing happened to a friend's 13-year-old son, got the jab.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's got a heart murmur.
Yeah, so it's like eventually, maybe, hopefully, if we live in an honest society, this will come out and they'll find out what the heck's going on.
And I think if we're being honest, we could all look at our own circle of people that we know and probably have a handful of people that, there's strong suspicion, right? I'll just put it that way. Strong suspicion that there's some sort of negative health event that happened after they got their vaccination. And I used to be in the healthcare field and we had to jump through all sorts of hoops. I didn't know anything at the time. Like they just got made me get all these, you know, shots of vaccinations and I had no education of what was being put in my body or the efficacy or why I was having these, you know, shots or how many strains there was. And then, you know, the vaccination only protected against 2 out of 100. And so I'm like, well, wait, you know, risk reward kind of thing. Those were never things that I, you know, even had a conversation for. And I was a paramedic and we studied all sorts of things about medicine, but that was an area that was just hush hush. And I've heard from other medical professionals too, that are doctorates, that is like they went through medical school and yeah, they did cover it, but it was such a short section.
Yeah,
or when they covered nutrition, such a short section.
Yeah, that's
and you're like, wait a minute, like nutrition is so vital for our health. If you get that dialed in well, like you can alleviate a lot of health problems. But yeah,
that's true.
You know, is there an incentive, right? Like if you're a pharmaceutical company, do you want to give people cures or do you want to create lifelong revenue streams in patients? I mean,
yeah, you get a shot every year. There's a good revenue stream.
So Glenn, I read that to get a new medicine or vaccine or anything to the market, it costs about $1 billion.
Yeah, I've heard that.
About $1 billion.
Wow.
For the first pill or shot.
For the
first
pill. Yeah. And so you have to sell this thing, no matter how good or bad it is.
Yeah.
Because you've invested.
You got a lot in it.
$1 billion.
They're a company. I mean, they're trying to turn a profit on, you know, what they just researched and developed. So, yeah, I mean, these are all inherent issues and good questions. And, you know, I never want to hopefully be divisive of any of this. I just have an inquisitive mind.
Like, yeah, we should be able to talk about this.
You know, even in high school, they're like, oh, you need to learn this stuff. And I go, okay, I'm failing to see why this particular really minute area of math is going to be helpful.
Yeah, for me, yeah.
When I don't even know how to balance a checkbook, when I don't even know how to, like, cook a meal, like, you know.
But you know calculus.
But I know calculus, which I'm like, how am I using this in real life? Like, I don't plan on being, you know, all these, you know, engineer or advanced, you know, degree types that are going to use that. Why is that? I would much rather prefer to spend my time learning a craft. Like, came out of high school not even knowing anything about a car or how to change oil. Like, yeah, that would have been a more practical skill for me, or learning about, like, how to have, you know, healthy relationships, right? So, yeah, like, you know, so one day when I get married.
You're not going to learn that skill, yeah.
It's just a good question. Like, you know, anyway, so it's
practical,
like,
things.
Practical, yeah, things. Like, why are we not teaching more of that? Because there's a lot of just kids that get pumped out of school. You could ask them, like, hey, what is, let's talk about the Constitution. Let's talk about the three separate, you know, branches of the government. And you just see a blank look.
The Consta what?
Yeah.
The Consta, yeah, what? I know. I can remember, you know, math theorems. Mm. But I couldn't name to you all the amendments to the Constitution. I know a bunch, yeah, of them.
But that would be more important. I mean,
to know your rights.
Yeah, know your rights. I mean, hey, some of these are great. You're going to be an engineer. You're going to be this or that. Well,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm starting to think that kids should be coming out of high school at like 16. Sure. And then you're either going to college, because come on, I mean, you're just doubling up on stuff at this point. It's like, how many more levels of, so if you really want to pursue this more, you're 16, okay, you're going to the 4-year university, then you at least be done by 20. But at 16, or hey, I'm going to learn how to work on Teslas. I'm going to learn how to work on rocket ships. I'm going to be a plumber. I mean, and I'm going to go to school for 2. By the time I'm 18, I'm working instead of going full-time.
Have you heard of the stupid education idea of earning badges, like skills badges?
Mm.
So basically they'd say, okay, instead of getting a 4-year degree, you'd go and take specific skills courses. So you could say, hey, I have a skill in this particular area, and earn a badge. Mm-hmm. And so when you go to apply for the job, they're not, you know, so much worried about your, you know, language arts or your, you know, all these other skills. Like, okay, what are the skills that are pertinent to this job? Like, yes, we want to have you have a badge in that area. Like if you're working customer service, like, you should have a good ability to talk to people, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe you have a customer service, a human interaction badge, and that's something you can earn through an educational platform. But I think, I almost wonder if that would be more effective.
Sounds like an ESG score.
But no, I mean, like, think about, like, if you have gone to college, how many classes you went through, and it was just to learn how to learn. Like, yeah, they'll say, hey, it's part of college is learning how to learn. You're like,
That is BS in my mind. You should learn how to learn by the time you get out of junior high.
Yeah, it's like, that's why, it was like Henry Ford. He's like, everything I need to know, I got by eighth grade or something, you know?
Yep.
I mean, and I'm not saying drop out of school at eighth grade, but I'm really thinking, by the time that middle high school area, you should have some direction.
By the time you're hitting ninth grade, it should be figured out what you're good at.
Yeah, like
everybody has skills, right? Yeah.
And natural God-given ability that's like, it's there, and you know.
Yeah.
You know by the time you're, you know, in your high school age. Like,
sure,
I'm good at this. I'm not good at that. I'm not going to be a musician or whatever.
And education looks different to different people, right? Yeah,
sure.
So
sure.
I think a lot of times we look at 4-year education as the only route to get an education.
Yeah,
but
it's not.
What about the individual that, you know, started a business and failed and then started another one and became successful? You look at some of these biggest tech companies out there, none of them finished college. Mm-hmm. You know, when they started their tech company, Zuckerberg didn't. I think Gates didn't. I don't know about Bezos where he finished, but it's interesting.
Steve Jobs is another one.
Yeah, so they, like, very smart people. Their education was just not the traditional route that we think it. So
they still had an education, though.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I never want to let, you know, a university or going to a class get in the way of my education, right? Yep. Education is important, 100%. It's just how you go about doing it. I think it's different for each person. We need to have some flexibility there. Because I remember I went out of high school and all my friends went to a 4-year university, and I'm like, I barely survived, like, not survived, but I barely, you know, was able to stomach through that last year of senior year, not because, you know, it's challenging, but I was bored.
I should have left at 10th grade.
Yeah, I'm like,
likewise.
I'm going to be honest. I should have left at 10th grade, wasted 2 more years. I absolutely wasted 2 more years. I was miserable. I should have been gone. And I know my kids will listen to this.
Well, here's a classic example. Like, I failed 11th grade English, had to do summer school both semesters.
Yeah.
When I went to college, I placed in about the top 7% in the country in English and didn't never had to take college English because I could test out of it. And I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, what happened there? Yeah.
Well, I didn't go straight out of high school into college, and I started reading a lot more, especially in the Bible.
Yeah.
And my English just got better on its own.
Yeah.
And I went from failure complete in 11th grade to went to NEU completely. I went through my undergrad and grad and never had to take a single English class because I tested out. And it's that point of, like, you get if you're not challenged, you get bored.
I got so bored by 10th grade, and I was just like,
The public school system is based around the least common denominator, right? It's the slowest, dullest student. And every student is gifted in something. But you might be really good in advertising and design, but you might be horrible in math.
Yeah.
But you're going to drag that whole math class down to your level.
Yeah.
And the whole advertising class is going to get dragged down to the math guy's level, who he has no sense of creativity.
So I think I got into my fifth grade year, like fourth, fifth, and sixth grade year, like starting in fourth grade, I was struggling a lot because I was getting into a lot of trouble. I was like a class clown, go figure. And then just had a lot of extra energy, just as a young boy, right? Boys have energy, you know, young kids have energy. Fifth grade, it was like a staple every day after lunch. It was an hour of physical activity. Like, the teacher would just take us out to the playground. It was in California. And you'd run, play soccer, freeze tags, just something. Mm-hmm. And my ability to do well in school just went through the roof because I was getting out all the energy. And then same thing happened in high school. I started running cross country every day, and I was running 7 or 8 miles. All of a sudden, my grades went through the roof because a lot of my extra energy and outlet that was positive, instead of just goofing off or making jokes, I could actually sit still in a classroom. You know, partly because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm tired. You know, I don't need to move around as much.
Well, that was one of the dumbest things Arizona did in an attempt to save education dollars, is they got rid of recess. Mm. Right? And so now the kids
are,
and at the same time, at the same time, so many more got diagnosed with ADHD, ADD. Mm. It's obvious what's happening. You're pumping the kids full of sugar, making them sit in a chair all day. They're getting no exercise like you're talking about. They can't focus.
And then they're like, oh, we got to pump them up with drugs because they're too active. Well, they're kids. Don't forget, time's running out on this really great deal from Gutter Helmet of Northern Arizona. Normally, it's 30% off that my listeners get. You guys get 35% off. All you got to do is mention the Jeff Horvitz Show when you call or text Carl the Gutter Helmet Man, and you find out more about this awesome system that protects your gutters. You don't have to go up on the roof anymore and clean all that junk out of your gutters. Multi-patented reverse curve deflects everything. Gutter Helmet has the best manufacturer's lifetime transferable warranty on performance and materials. Call or text Carl the Gutter Helmet Man right now. Take advantage of this great 35% off if you mention the Jeff Horvitz Show. 928-318-6555. 928-318-6555. All right, continuing on with Mark Howitt and Glenn Least.
And so we've been homeschooling since day one, so I've got three kiddos.
Nice.
8 is my oldest daughter, 6 my middle daughter, and my son is 4. And so we've been homeschooling from day one. And it was really just we started kindergarten because it was a time convenience, because we live in Kachina and we knew it was going to be 45 minutes in, 45 minutes back, and have to go back in and pick them back up again. Where we had a friend that was homeschooling and saying, we could do 45 minutes of kindergarten a day and be done.
And done,
And so we're like, wait a minute, that's a far better payoff. Like, what if we just did, an hour and a half in one day, like twice a week or three times a week? We'd be hitting enough hours. And so that gave a lot more flexibility. So we just adopted that. And then I look at my daughter now, she is flourishing. And partly because we've encouraged her to, pursue things that are interesting to her. So she likes... She's a little entrepreneur. She's just really smart, And so she's always thinking of ways like, how can I start a business? How can I make money? How can I do these things or learn a new skill? And then also she found out she was a really good artist. And so great. Let's, maybe you paint these pictures. I have a couple up in my office and I had a client come in. He's like, I'll take two of those and one of those. Go to my daughter. I was like, start painting. You're going to make about $100 here. So it's like, there's just a shift and we're going at her pace. And so, we're not forcing her to say, you have to be at this proficiency at this age, because each child, develops differently. I think it was one of the private schools had a criteria where the kids had to be able to read by kindergarten.
That's maybe fine for girls. Boys, no way.
I was thinking about that. Yeah. Like, you have to be able to read. It's either by the start of kindergarten or by the end of kindergarten, be able to read. And that was really, really, I almost think that at that age, they don't even have an appetite for wanting to read. As the kids start to get older, they're like, I want to read because I want to know what this stuff says. And so that's where you're like, okay, this is the era where we can really grow that, instead of like, hey, we're going to push this down them before they're really ready or capable of doing it. And so, just a shift in philosophies. And so also the time constraints are much different. And so we're not having to spend, 7 hours in a classroom, because a lot of the time in the classroom, at least from what I remember, there's a lot of like behavioral issues, some downtime. And so if you're actually to cut it out and just say, okay, just the productive times we're actually doing things, maybe we could get away with a 3 or 4 hour work, day, and then let the kids go home and live their life and be kids.
Like, there's a lot of filler in there.
Yeah. That's for sure. Public school, like, it changed a lot since I went to school, but my brother was like 7 years younger than me. And I remember he would just come home with hours and hours of homework, too. So he'd be, like, in tears.
It's like, you couldn't get that done in the 7 hours?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's like, oh, we got to have more homework.
Even in high school, my philosophy is, I'm going to take the time, whatever I can do, so I don't have homework once I leave the school grounds. Because I'd be checked out from school at that time, give myself a break, go lift some weights, go hang out with friends. And I still got good marks. But that was, like, I didn't want to take that home. Because, a good question is, like, then you're like always in school mode and some people really enjoy school, but some of it's frankly, it's work. It is work. So
they're done. And I mean, our kids go 4 days a week and they're done at four. They're like, I'm glad I don't go Friday.
Yeah. One of my closest friends, he moved to South Korea, married a South Korean woman, and he's teaching English over there. And he said, the strangest thing is you'll see kids fourth, fifth, sixth grade walking around at 9 o'clock at night with their backpacks, because they get out of school and then they do homework and then they go to their tutor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, it's just nonstop school. And it really is silly. And you touched on a good point. Like, as boys and girls, we cannot treat them the same in school.
Sure.
And they've been calling this the effeminization of the male student, because girls can read early. Their fine motor skills are going well. Boys are like developing their big motor skills. Uh-huh. They need to run around. One of the wisest women I knew about training kids was, she's like, with my boys, I don't even try to teach them to read till they're 7 or 8.
Really?
Yeah. And then they just take off and they get it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And a good friend of mine, his mother did that homeschooling. She's like, boys just need to go to play. Didn't teach him anything till he was 8 or 9. He graduated top of his class at NEU as a mechanical engineer.
Oh, how about that?
And I think there's a lot that...
trying to defy nature sometimes.
Learned through play. So I think that's the one thing we're like, oh, recess is just a waste of time. You're like, no, that's actually good time for them to learn helpful skills, learn social skills, learn how to interact with people. If you're playing a game, learn how to lose. Like, to realize that there's winners and losers in life.
Learning how to lose.
Yeah, and if you're tired of being a loser, like, in losing, like, what do you need to do to change it? I mean, that's what made Michael Jordan such a great ball player, is he just kept losing so many times, where he's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I hate the feeling of losing, and losing, right at the buzzer and the game-winning shot, and I missed it. And so then he becomes one of the most prolific players ever. So I think with education, it's like, okay, we shouldn't downplay the effect of playing or going out and doing things or building stuff, using your hands, that tactile, because some kids really learn well with that. And for me, I was one of those, mm-hmm. but everything was books, mm-hmm. which I'm like, okay, I could do okay in that area, but I kind of like going out and doing stuff too, like learning, you know, things, you know, by doing it. Like that's, you know, some people really learn well that way. So that's just maybe something that, you know, we're able to do a little better as, at homeschool than we were in the public school system.
If you're in the public school, I'm saying change it to 16. They're done.
And you're redeeming a lot. You're redeeming a lot of time. I've heard this from other homeschoolers.
A lot of time. Like, yeah. Homeschooling is great.
I'm like, what does it take you to keep up with public school? And they're like, eh, day and a half every week.
It goes to show you the comparison there.
Yep.
All right. You guys, we went on a wide range of stuff there.
Oh, we just keep going.
We hit it all.
I talk for a living too.
Yeah. I appreciate it though. And, we'll do it again real soon. And hit on some of the other stuff.
One of my
Mark's going to keep going.
Here's one. Back up Glenn's point. It just reminded me of something really wise. One of my nephews who's very successful, he told me this thing. He's like, the A's and B's work for the C's. Meaning the students. The A students and the B students.
Work for the
C students. Because the C students are the ones in the playground learning social skills.
Yeah.
Learning how to win and lose.
Yeah.
Learning all those practical things. And the guy who's just learning the math. In the English, he's going to get out and he's going to get a job.
Yeah.
But he's going to end up working for the C student who knows how to talk to people, who knows how to mm-hmm. relate to people.
Or resolve conflicts. Like, right? That's something where you're like, okay.
Look, playground conflicts.
We screwed up. We're sorry. Here's what we're doing to rectify the situation. Here's how we're going to make it right. And it's not going to happen ever again. Because we're all human. This stuff happens in business. And even in my business, almost everything could be fixed. You know, it's just a matter of how much time and money it's going to cost to do that. But so if something goes wrong and the client was negatively harmed, we're like, hey, we're going to fix this. Like, you're not going to have to bear the brunt of that. But even just that skill of communicating of like, you know, saying like, we recognize an area that wasn't working and here's how we're going to do. Here's how we're going to resolve it. Or you've got some concerns, you know, things that you'd like to see done differently. How can we, you know, rise to that occasion, right? So that's something I've also had to develop too, is setting expectations. Like, what is your expectation of our relationship? And if for whatever reason I'm not meeting those expectations, please tell me, because I want to rise to that occasion. So mm-hmm. those are things that maybe the A and B students is so focused on. And I'm not saying that is a general thing, but it's just a difference in skill sets. And so maybe the, you know, engineer is great, you know, doing some things, but maybe, you know, isn't as well developed in some of those social areas or relationships. Majority of my career and my business is relationship building. And it's, you know, it takes a long time to build a relationship and very quick to break the relationship. And so mm-hmm. that's a, what is it? It takes 30 years to build trust and 10 minutes to break it.
10
seconds to break it. So, I mean, those are things that like have served me well in my career of just learning how to master those skills that, I mean, my marks weren't amazing in school, but I would venture to say I've probably done better than majority of my classmates at this time. And I had some very smart friends and classmates, but it took me a little while. Like, I didn't find my groove until
no way, my classmates. No.
Yeah.
All right, couple things here before we get back to it. Numarco's Pizza has been voted the best pizza in Flagstaff for many years in a row. I love Numarco's Pizza. I love their wings, their cheesy bread or whatever they call it there. It's awesome. Plus all their craft beers. Three locations in Flagstaff, numarcospizza.com if you want to order online or for curbside pickup or delivery. numarcospizza.com, that's numarcospizza.com. Also, thank you to the Blind Brothers. You know, this is where Angela and I went last year. She was talking about it on the show just the other day about how great our blinds are. The Blind Brothers came in. They gave us a bunch of options. Then they took everything out. Well, as soon as they ordered the blinds for us and gave us a great price, they came back. They took all the old blinds out, put in new ones, because I had the Blind Brothers do installation. If you mention the Jeff Horvitz show, when you call the Blind Brothers, you're going to get half off on installation. Have them do the installation. Call the Blind Brothers. Mention the Jeff Horvitz show, 928-634-2423. That's the Blind Brothers at 928-634-2423. Or go to theblindbrothers.com. Don't go anywhere. More to come.
This is the Jeff Horvitz show.
It's never as easy as they put on paper.
Sure. Yeah.
That, hey, we're gonna do this, and everything's gonna be rainbows, unicorns, and you know, no problem. We're going to wave our magic wand. It's never that easy.
I feel like they did that during the pandemic. Oh, we'll just solve all of our problems by, you know, creating $8 or $9 trillion out of thin air. You're like, okay, anyone that's ever researched history of countries that have done that have failed in spectacular fashion. It's just a matter of how soon they fail. Like,
there's not enough people thinking through.
You can't just print money out of thin air and that's going to solve all your problems. Like, you have like these failed dictatorship countries where you have like a warlord who becomes president, has no economic, you know, education, just keeps printing money. Like, oh, we owe more money. Let's just print more money. And eventually you have it where you're driving, you know, you're having these $1 trillion bills that are worthless. And you're like, well, let's cancel it all, start all
Zimbabwe,
over.
Zimbabwe.
Yeah, exactly. Zimbabwe. And so you're like, okay, why are people not thinking about how much of a problem this, the Federal Reserve is? They've really overstepped their bounds. And so I'm a proponent of like, I think we should probably reduce their input because I think a lot of times they've saved us from, you know, recession because they don't want it to be bad. But, you know, recessions just like wildfires are a natural
part of things. Then they make it worse. Eventually it explodes into a huge fire.
Yeah, eventually it's the big, big one that hits because they you know, shaved off in any of those.
Which one of these days is coming? I don't know when.
Well, so here's the thing. How do cities have a balanced budget mandate? States have a balanced budget mandate. You can't borrow like the federal government does at the state or the city or the county level. You can't do that. You can get bonds and this sort of thing, but you have to balance the budget.
Yeah.
State of Arizona.
Not feds. The feds. Nope.
And if it does work to balance your budget, Arizona's doing fine as a state.
Yeah. Putting money aside. They should return it to us.
Rainy day fund. Yeah. You balance the budget. You say, all right, we've got $18 billion, whatever it is. Which things are we going to spend the money on?
Yeah.
Not everything. We have to pick.
Yeah. It's only so much there. Unlike the feds, it's unlimited.
So that actually brings up the BRICS nations, right? So a lot of these countries are starting to look at tying their currency to an actual physical asset, whether that's gold, silver, anything. It could be salt, at least something.
Could be to GDP.
Yeah. And so.
What was that?
Your GDP.
GDP.
Okay.
If they start doing that, they're going to have a lot more strength, you know, to their currency. Now, anytime you look at a currency, you need to look at three things, right? What's the strength of the military? How big is the military? You know, can they, you know, say stuff and enforce it? How big economy? And then lastly, what's the stability of their government? And so, you know, because my client's like, oh my gosh, is the U.S. dollar going to collapse? I'm like, I don't think so. Because those three things are still really good. I mean, we have some political instability.
What's the alternative?
Yeah, what's the alternative? We're the cleanest shirt in a dirty laundry basket, right?
Yeah.
As a nation. And we're a good nation, don't get me wrong. Like, I love America. I'm wearing an American shirt right now. Like, I love what our country stands for. But
I got a flag on my shirt. Mark,
you can't just keep spending yourself into an oblivion and printing up new money because really inflation is a tax on us as consumers. And we don't think of it that way, but we should. Like, if inflation's 7%, oh, we didn't raise taxes on you, but inflation's now jumped 7%. Well, that's the same as you having to raise taxes 7%. It's actually even worse, too, because everyone has to pay that. Whereas at least with taxes, if you're under a certain income threshold, you get excluded. So inflation is really just a nasty beast. It's actually what I believe crippled the Roman Empire. Like, it wasn't the invaders and all this civil unrest. It was they had an unstable currency because they kept debasing their currency.
They did.
And people couldn't even transact. They couldn't even buy bread from each other. Like, that's where you get the term worth your weight in salt, because some places traded in salt because at least it had value to it. You know, talk about monetary policy and even just this current, you know, debate coming up. I think they're going to talk about inflation, but I think the bigger conversation is, you know, why do we need the Federal Reserve? Should we allow it to still have the same power, you know, that it has today? Or should we drastically reduce its reach? Because it's not a federal agency. Everyone's like, the Federal Reserve is part of the government. You're like, no, it's a private group of central banks that get appointed by the government, but they still get to determine monetary policy. And frankly, you know, I think they're using technology and tools that were, you know, worked 30 years ago, but they may not work now. Like, they're just outdated methods. Quantitative easing, quantitative tightening. Sounds fancy. It just means printing money out of thin air.
Or pulling back. They don't have a lot of tools, really, but they have a lot of power. Yeah. And very few people have a lot of power over the whole economy and the whole world, really.
Yeah, I mean, they literally hit a button on the computer and they just print money. They don't even print it. They just it creates zeros. Yeah, like,
it's,
I have to work hard for the money. Like, I wish I could just do that on my computer, hit the button, and I have $1 trillion.
Yeah.
It's called a credit card, Glenn. You get one.
Yeah, yeah.
So they have limits, right? They'll come knocking on your door if you don't pay them.
It's pet month at ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. I know you all love your pets out there. I love mine as well. But sometimes they make a mess. A lot of times they make a mess. Or they get odors in the carpet or the fabrics, couches, things like that. Take advantage of Pet Month with the promo code PUPPYLOVE, all capital, PUPPYLOVE, all one word, PUPPYLOVE, when you go to ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. Enter in that promo code PUPPYLOVE, get 20% off. Plus, why don't you call ZeroRes? And if you got any follow-up questions, anything about, because sometimes they got to do more intense cleaning. And then they've also got the carpet cleaning, the tile cleaning, fabric cleaning, and all their normal stuff. So give ZeroResNorthernArizona.com a call right now, 928-378-8888. That's 928-378-8888. I actually hurt my back last week, like Thursday. Was that you? Were you here or was that?
No, I was here Wednesday.
Maybe it was Wednesday. Yeah. Did we do a 3-hour thing?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it was Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it was Thursday. Well, it doesn't matter. I like couldn't lay down for a couple of days. It's like sitting.
Well, what? Why are you in this kind of chair? Like, you should be in like a
knife. I've bought those good ones. They suck too. What should I be buying?
I don't know. Like, I had an okay office chair, and then I bought one that was like more ergonomic, you know, and rated well. Back pain went away. That and your shoes matter a lot, and your bed. Mm-hmm. Those are probably three that you can.
It's because these are from Costco or Sam's Club, right?
Mm-hmm.
I bought the expensive chair. I didn't think it made a difference. And I bought the expensive shoe, too. And that didn't make a difference. So I got the cheapest shoe and the cheapest chair. It's been good until last week. So.
I think it depends on what brand of shoe you're looking for. I found for me, like, the more barefoot or flat-soled shoes tend to be the best for me. Like, I bought some on Amazon. They're like $45, and they just feel great. And sometimes when you have a shoe that has too much padding, it, like, you know, your foot kind of gets this weird mold.
Maybe I should just go barefoot. Well, okay, especially the boots. For you. The boots, right? So I was going to buy the big expensive boots, and they always come apart.
Yep.
And then I was at, like, boot place, and it was like $200. And they're like, I was like, how long is this going to last? They're like, probably 6 months. I was like, well, the Walmart one lasted. So I went and bought the boots at Walmart, you know, the ones, the work boots, the leather looking ones, $25.95. They last 6 months. So I just buy like five of them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really good for the climate.
I bought a pair.
Yeah, I don't care.
Work boots when I was like 19, and they were a nice pair, and they lasted me like a good 10 years. Like,
it used to be you'd get them fixed, mm-hmm. you know, they were made.
Yeah,
to last forever.
Things did used to last. Like, if you had a refrigerator from the 60s, the thing is still going, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you bought a fridge 10 years ago, it's dead.
You know what my biggest pet peeve is the new dishwashers. In an attempt to reduce the amount of water they use, they put restrictions, but you end up having to wash it twice.
Yeah, it's like flushing the toilet.
Or you have to rinse it a bunch of times. So the old dishwashers, before they had those restrictions, you could just put it through once, done, every time.
Like, I just won't buy, eventually I won't buy one. I'll just say, I'll hand wash it.
Yeah. I hand wash anyway. I don't like the dishwasher.
I don't. You know what else? I don't have the microwave. I don't have a disposal.
Yeah,
I hate the disposal, and it took them a while. You know why? Because they put things down there, and then I'm fixing. I'm taking it apart. So finally, it got jammed up and broken. It was just potato peels. One this time, of course. I was like, that's it.
No disposal would cause. All
they come. No, they rentals are gone.
Yeah,
they're gone.
So you took it out of your house?
Yeah. Oh. I have no disposal, so I bought the bigger one where it all goes down the drain.
Yeah.
Or you take it out and you go clean it. And I'm just like, why do we even need this disposal? And we haven't had one for years.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And I'm still married. So, you know, it worked. I mean, Angela's very patient. She has to be with me.
I go two ways with disposals. Either don't have one or go get the $500 one that if you put a fork down there, it'll turn it into little bits.
It's probably good for, getting rid of hard drives.
We've actually gotten rid of using our microwave, surprisingly enough, the last couple of years. My wife is doing a lot of research and basically was saying that the microwave really zaps a lot of the nutrients out of
food.
Oh,
I'm sure it does, yeah.
So we just warm stuff up back up on the stove. And so
iron skillet, I'm all about it.
We have iron skillets from decades from, we inherited from something.
So we actually,
really good.
My wife and I have this really big argument. She uses the microwave like crazy. I won't touch it. I don't think I've ever turned the thing on in 12 years of marriage.
Yeah, tinfoil hat.
Tinfoil hat. And if she turns it on, I actually get up and move across the room. But we got a tester from NAU, an electronic device, to test the microwave to see if it was leaking. And it turned out all around the seal around the door, it was leaking.
Leaking what?
Microwave energy.
That's okay. It's good for you.
Cook your insides.
Yeah. keeps COVID away.
And you got real close to the grid on the front.
Here's what I did with the microwave. This is in Camp Verde. When I put the cabinets in, you know, normally they sucker you into getting the microwave thing.
Cabinet, yep.
And it's this big. It's
30 inches.
30 inches. Yeah. It weighs 850 pounds. It's ridiculous. I mean, you could cook a turkey in there. It's like, who does that? We only use the microwave to, like, your coffee gets cold.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe if you have some leftovers, you're going to throw it in there real quick, but not to cook any. It's not for like a cooking thing, for food, for normal meals. So I went to Walmart and I bought the smallest one, the absolute tiniest one, and I just put the shelf in. And instead of the oven hood being there, there's a little microwave.
Okay, so it's perfect. I'm
it looks,
so
and then you have cookbooks
it.
Next to it. It looks good.
I'll reheat everything in my iron skillet. And I had a bowl of, you know what it was? It was Rotel tomato and Velveeta cheese together. You make a dip. Cheese dip, right?
Okay.
And I had a bowl of that in a ceramic bowl, and I was like, I don't want to microwave it, and I don't want to take it out of the bowl to heat it up. So I was like, I wonder if I can just put the bowl right on top of that natural gas flame.
Mm.
And did it crack the bowl?
It did not.
Sounds like something.
I kept the flame down low enough, and I stirred it enough, and it heated my cheese, and I was like,
sounds like something Biden would do that causes a house fire with your cats.
It worked. And I was thinking, I was like, people put casseroles in the oven with, you know, in a ceramic.
The Pyrex, yeah.
Or even a ceramic bowl. Either way, either Pyrex or ceramic. Yeah. I was like, why can't you just do that on the stovetop? And you can if you're careful.
We had a Pyrex last Thanksgiving explode in our oven. It was a new one. And we had a big turkey right below it. So there's like glass shards
all in the turkey.
So we're like, well, dinner's going to be a little bit later. So.
You got to pick the glass out.
It sounded like a gunshot when, like, they open the oven. It just all boom. It just exploded. Yeah. We have no idea why.
We shouldn't be talking about this because last time someone talked about this, they ruined the gas can. So now they're going to come ruin your kitchen. Remember, if you get a rock chip in your windshield, always call Diamond Auto Glass first. They're going to be able to take care of that and stop it from spreading to the rest of your windshield, and that gets very, very expensive. Diamond Auto Glass, your independent, locally owned, great Northern Arizona company, the place I go to get my windshields replaced and also repaired with this chip repair. Always call Diamond Auto Glass first at 928-779-4140. That's what I do, 928-779-4140, or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. Final thoughts when we come back. All right, just about out of time. I hope everybody has great plans for the weekend. I think I'm going to hit up that fly-in and Flagstaff, and then we'll see what else. Owen and I might go out and do some things with that. That's always fun. Maybe even meet Bruce Sithinger out there. You might want to head on out to Williams. Go to Ms. Kitty Steakhouse. No matter where you're at in Northern Arizona, maybe you want it still a little hot in the lower areas, so maybe come on up to Williams and go to Ms. Kitty Steakhouse. Get a great steak. If you're going out for dinner or stop by for breakfast, they start breakfast early in the morning. You can get one of the best breakfasts in Northern Arizona right there at Miss Kitty's Steakhouse right on Route 66 in Williams. Then go enjoy and walk around wonderful town of Williams. Miss Kitty's Steakhouse, go ahead and do that. Thank you to all the sponsors out there. Appreciate all the support you guys give us. Please support our sponsors, everyone out there, and tell them you heard about it here on the show. Thank you to everyone who has been subscribing to the YouTube channel, but also the new Rumble channel. Thank you. This is going good. I'm getting more views on that than I ever got on YouTube. Follow me on Rumble. Also subscribe to the podcast. Appreciate that. Those numbers are growing too. We got everything podcast. All the shows are podcast now. We're up to, this is actually show number 1700. Yes, 1700 shows. So thanks for subscribing. Look up Jeff Orvitz, O-R-A-V-I-T-S. That's O-R-A-V-I-T-S. Appreciate it, guys. Let's do it again. We're done. I'm going to go eat. I'm having fun, but hey, time to go eat some food and catch up with you guys real soon. Appreciate
it. Sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
This is the Jeff Orvitz Show.